Good morning. It's so great to see you all. And I'd like to open with this beautiful quote from Patanjali. When you are inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all your thoughts break their bounds. Your consciousness expands in every direction, and you find yourself in a new, great, and wonderful world. Dormant forces, faculties, and talents become alive, and you discover yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever dreamed you could be. So I'd like to open this morning with just setting the intention for what we're trying to do. So if you could just set up with me, closing your eyes and visualizing this next 3 hours, the space of time, resonant with inspiration. And we'll talk about what resonant means in just a few minutes. But feel it filled with vibrations of energy, of inspiration, of upliftment, of creativity. And see this as a seed opportunity to plant the seeds for the future, to open doors into releasing these dormant faculties. So I wanted to continue with a beautiful quote from Paramahansa Yogananda, and he wrote this book, Whispers from Eternity, which are a collection of prayer demands, and this is one of his: from peak to peak and from heart to heart I will fly, singing thy name. Bless me, my own true Father, that I may fly with thee from peak to peak, or lie on the grass and sing thy song to the birds. Bless me, that I may wade through the streams of human feeling to bring to all the song of thy glory. Bless me that I may whirl around starry rims, blazing thy name. With the nebulae, I will spread thy holy name. Bless me that with the humming atoms, I may attune my song to thine. I may attune my song to thine. Your handouts, you'll see that we've got a few words that we're going to be working with this morning. And attune is going to be one of those very, very powerful words that we'll get to in a minute. With the nebulae, I will spread thy holy name. And it's interesting to think about what inspiration is. Back in the ancient Greeks and Roman times, they talked about the daemons, or in the Roman case, genius. These little spirits that were inhabiting the world around us that would come out and grant you these opportunities to feel great influxes of energy, a great expansion, a great idea. And these, it's interesting the word daemon turned into demon, something outside that influenced us in a bad way. Whereas the word daemon were these muses, so to speak, that would come and visit us. And it's still up for debate whether inspiration lies within us, whether inspiration comes from an outside source. I think it's a mixture of both. So my most recent date with inspiration happened at the beginning of the filming process for Finding Happiness. So let me tell you a little backstory on that. I got a call about a year before the screening was to start, and Santoshi, whom many of you know, called me and said, "You know, David, you've heard about the movie, and I'm in meetings right now with the directors and Swami and the producers, and we're trying to figure out who's going to play this role, Roger, and I think you would be really good. Would you be willing to put your name in the hat to see if that would work out for you?" And I said, "Sure, movie schmovie, it's, you know, we've been hearing about this for years. What the heck, it's never going to happen anyway." So I met with them, and we had a little interview, and they decided that everybody was going to just play themselves. It's interesting. In this original script, it said, "Roger, a rugged-looking young man." A rugged-looking man. And then in revised scripts, it said, "David, a refined-looking gentleman." I said, "Wait a minute. What happened?" So the process unfolded, the script got developed, and then I had a chance to meet with Swami Kriyananda and Elizabeth Rome, the starring actress, the director Ted Nicolau, and Jyotishan Devi, and many others, in a private meeting. And it was a wonderful opportunity for everybody to just kind of get together, hold the energy, and see what was trying to happen. And it was just such an exciting time because we felt, all of us together, that this was going to be a way of awakening people to the fact that they were looking for happiness. They were looking for God, if you choose to call it that. And this was going to awaken that desire in them that they never realized that they had. So it was a beautiful meeting. And then we all stepped outside. We left Swami's apartment. We stepped outside and we were talking about the nitty-gritty of like how many hours a day it's going to be, what's the flow, what's going to be this. And for me, it was just like I didn't need to be a part of that. But all of a sudden, I felt this energetic presence come over me. And I was looking around and nobody else seemed to be noticing it. So I just kind of stepped back a little bit and said, "Hello, who are you? Nice to meet you. Wow, what's your name?" So it was an incredible feeling that I can only describe as being energetic. It had a presence to it. I didn't feel words come through to me, but it was just, if you've ever been in a presence of inspiration, in a presence of greatness, in a presence of something that takes your breath away, it was literally like that. For those of you who meditate, perhaps you've had an especially deep meditation where you're just very, very still and you feel this energy come over you. And here I was in the midst of conversations. I wasn't meditating at that particular moment, and all of a sudden just felt this incredible blessing. Now, I wonder if it had to do with the fact that 8 hours previous, I had finally started to figure out what I had gotten myself into. I looked up, well, who is this Ted Nicolau guy anyway, the director? I hadn't really gotten to know him at that point. And so I went on the internet and read a little bit about him. Oh, so he does vampire movies. Oh, okay. And it just brought up this kind of like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? And then all of a sudden to feel this presence of inspiration, of blessing. And as a musician, I'm very much accustomed to working with resonance, with working with feeling, with working with sound. And this presence filled my body, filled my energy, filled my mind. And it was so important for me to feel that because it was the unspoken direction in that moment of, hi, I'm the force behind this film. I want you to portray me in every single scene that you're in. I want you to convey me through every single note that you produce in the soundtrack. And that was the defining moment there that gave me that underlying direction. So throughout that process, I am not a trained actor. I can have fun on stage and ham it up. But as far as when it comes to acting, I have never taken a class. And then when the first day came, it was, okay, so David, we're going to have you walk down these steps with Juliet, and I want you to explain to her in the Crystal Hermitage how Swami built this for the community, and then he ran out of funds, and then the community decided to build it for him, and then you're going to walk here, you're going to hit your mark here, you're going to pranam to these marks, and action! He assumed that all of us would carry naturally our ability to converse with some sort of intelligence into the experience where you've got tens of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars worth of equipment all focused on you, and there's $10,000 a minute being spent on this project. Come on in. And in that moment, my mind retreated to the farthest, most corner it could possibly find, and I must have gotten into a state of somewhat of a shock. Thankfully, due to a glitch, they had to reshoot that scene. But that process for me, over and over again, and you'll see in the movie how there are times when I'm just hanging out. I am Elizabeth's guide as she goes to meet all these different people. And so, first of all, being on screen, feeling natural in front of a camera took a little bit of getting used to. But then playing yourself? How do you play yourself? It's like brought up all these questions of who is David Eby and what's his motivation? And it was such a blessing to see, many of you know Narayani, who was Swamiji's assistant. And there were some scenes that they ended up cutting from the film, but she was so natural. She was so comfortable and just presenting herself and so open. I was like, how does she do that? How is she just so able to convey that essence? So for me, it was, if you sensed a little bit of like, he doesn't seem quite comfortable with himself, it's because I was like, oh, who is this? But then when I started to realize that my greatest job, once again, was to resonate with the inspiration that I felt that day at that meeting, then it all seemed to come to place. So we're going to be doing some techniques that I learned how to do that you can do whether you're standing in line at the grocery store, whether you are working on a project, whether you are in the midst of giving a presentation like this, whether you are doing your taxes in these next 2 months. So we're going to cover that whole gamut. And I'll just conclude it was an incredible experience doing the movie. And for me, one of the greatest blessings was to feel at the end of the last recording session that we did here, just once again, this inspiration came and it just filled me. And it wasn't like a knock on the door. It was just the sudden realization that, oh, wow, it's there. And I just took a back seat. I was driving to stay overnight with Karen and David, and I just let that presence be. And it was the greatest joy that you can imagine. Everybody is looking for joy. Everybody is looking for inspiration in some form or another. Whether you think of inspiration as a jolt of energy with a great idea, you go into any gas station marketplace and it's all just filled with energy, whether it's a Red Bull, whether it's any kind of 5-hour energy boost, anything that gives us energy is what people are looking for, whether it's sugar, whether it's carbohydrates. And what I want to convey is that inspiration is available to us constantly. You'll see on your handouts that today's experiment is going to be whether inspiration can be channeled at will. So that's what we are here to discover how to do. Many of us who are meditators have had deep places of inspired meditations that are so completely from the difficult ones, which are, here I am, I'm doing this yet again. It's a meditation practice. It's not a meditation performance. My good friend Melinda, who is a fabulous violist, is here, and we are practicers. We take out our instruments and we practice. We make mistakes. Our mind wanders. You know, we bring it back. We're always working on something. It's playing music takes a certain amount of drudgery, of doing the scales, of doing those compulsory exercises that enable you to express. And when we're talking about inspiration of meditation that comes, we're used to feeling something out of the ordinary. But here we are charged with a great work, and that great work is carrying inspiration into every activity that we do. One of the greatest challenges is to have these great inspirations in meditation and then want to hold on to them. And so you go about your day in this inner inspiration, you know, trying to stay in this place. And that's what seclusion is so wonderful for. But we have our lives to lead. We are here. Many of you are here because you have chosen to take this inspiration and share it with people. I've, for the past 12 years, have lived in the Ananda Village. And for me, it was a time of running away from the world. It was a time for me to say, I'm done. I've been there. I lived in Portland before moving there. And I was just ready to dive deeper. I was ready for that deeper experience, which came from severing the world. Now, Melinda was like, what do you mean you ran away from the world? I saw you every at rehearsal all the time. Relatively speaking, I chose to withdraw into a place so that I could experience that more completely. And for me, the inspiration has come to take what I've learned, and this movie was a wonderful way to kind of get me out the door, of just kind of seeing this is where you need to go, David. This is how you need to be sharing these ideas. So I've moved back to Portland to be, and boy, it is not without challenge, to be back in that full life immersion in a city like you all have experienced here. And in a way to bring this inspiration that I've felt out to people who are so desperately in need of it and who are so desperately wanting it. And so for those of you who choose to, I want to use this workshop as a means of taking the inner inspiration that you feel and carrying it out in every interaction that you have in this busy life that we live here. Okay, so I'm going to take you through a couple of these slides here, if I can get everything to work again. So I was prepping for a presentation on three different aspects of the musical experience: musical creativity, performance, and consciousness. My wife came by and said, "What is here?" They all tie together through their connection to a source of inspiration. And we're going to look at how this inspiration comes into play for the performing musician, but please feel free to substitute any occupation or endeavor as it would apply to your life. And so let's go back to where it all begins. At the center of the slide is a beginner's ego, young and innocent. And I want to be clear that the ego isn't a bad thing. It's our sense of self. It's what we have to work with. The beginner musician's ego feeds on inspiration and initial excitement as they begin to explore their newfound musical creativity, as they receive encouragement from others during their first performances, and as they experience the thrill of that the great masterpieces evoke in our consciousness. So there are incredible pieces of music that are able to carry vibration. Paramahansa Yogananda says that sound is the most powerful force in the universe. As a musician, this is, yes, I did the right thing. this is just confirmed in that very statement why I got involved in music in the first place. Sound is the most powerful force in the universe. Why? What is sound but vibrations? And what are we but vibrations of energy at the subtlest level? And this is the wonderful thing about the developing string theory and quantum theory, how we scientists are taking matter down to its smallest particle, finding out that, yes, it is all energy. And they're discovering that at the core of the universe, if the string theory is correct, is music, is sound. Everything around us is in a state of vibration. And music has, and sound has, this ability to convey inspiration. Now, sound waves function just like water waves do. So you can imagine how water brings to the shores trash or shells from the deep or driftwood or treasures. And just as water waves can carry those things, so do sound waves. Sound waves on the subtlest level carry vibrations of thought, of feeling. So sound carries vibrations of thought and feeling. We are betrayed at every turn with our voice. How many of us have been in a conversation with our spouse and we're trying to really keep it under control? We're, you know, we're a little irritated and we say, that's fine. And it just, that word comes out. And they'll look at us and they'll say, what do you mean to pull that kind of a, I said fine, what are you getting so upset about? But they betray our consciousness. Our voices cannot help but convey our state of consciousness. So we'll talk about how we can use our voice to convey inspiration later on today. But great masterpieces. Shanti is reading a fabulous book called Talks with Great Composers by Arthur Abel. And Melinda, if you haven't read this book, it's a fabulous book. Brahms is interviewed, and the young man asks him to please describe his creativity, his creative process. And Brahms says, well, okay, but you may not publish this until 50 years after my death. This is in the early 1890s. And he says, I go into this place that's in between wakefulness and dreaming. And the interviewer says, oh, you mean like the subconscious? No, the subconscious implies something lower. This is something like superconscious. This is something like superconscious. And for those of you who are familiar with Yogananda's teachings, superconsciousness plays a huge role in trying to convey these inspired states. So this is in 1890. It doesn't get published until the 1940s. Yogananda comes to the States in the 1920s. So they're all tuning into the same thing. The great composers tune in to this place. You've all perhaps seen the movie Amadeus and how you've heard how Mozart was able to just contact inspiration and receive these great masterpieces, and nobody could find fault with them. They were just perfect. And Beethoven was in constant contact with God. So they were able to go to this place, to go to this source of inspiration, to bring alive through their music. Now, Swami Kriyananda does this through music, and my turning point came when I was fresh on the path at Ananda in Portland. And I went to the first service with Jurgen Vedura, as a matter of fact. They happened to be visiting, and they happened to be here this weekend as well. And the little choir, there was like 8 or 9 singers, and they sang. I said, oh, how nice, this man Swami Kriyananda happened to write some sweet music. Isn't that nice? Well, I've got a lot of free time right now. I'm not working that much. I'll join the choir, and I'll take them to a whole new level. Little did I know that it was going to be me, that it was going to be taken to a whole new level. So I was playing in the opera orchestra at the time, and Melinda knows all about playing in the opera orchestra. When you're in the opera orchestra, you are in the pit. Now, how would you like to work in the pit? There's not a whole lot of pits that have good connotations. And that particular evening, I was playing on, because, well, first of all, you're crammed in there. The violas sit right next to me. I'm trying not to hit the violas with over here, and I'm trying not to hit here, and just everything's like this. And whenever you're constricted, it never feels good. Expansiveness always feels good, except if you have that weird, what's the fear of expansive places? What is it? Agoraphobia. Are there any agoraphobes in here? Okay, great. I wonder if the opera orchestra would be filled with agoraphobes. Anyway, so the conductor was uninspired. He was over his head. He was frustrated. He didn't know how to get everybody to work together. And whenever you're working under an uninspired, frustrated boss, you know that is not a very fun experience. So I was driving home that night in a deep funk because I could not. Environment is stronger than willpower, and I was just in a really negative place. And I suddenly realized, oh, I have this solo to sing in this upcoming concert. I better practice it. So I sang this simple 40-second song using only the 8 notes that used only the 8 notes of a major scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. It didn't use any complex chords or sophisticated voice leading. All it was this, a simple melody. And as soon as that 40 seconds was over, my consciousness had changed so dramatically. All this energy was focused up here at my spiritual eye, and I had to say, what in the world just happened? I spent 25 years at that point playing every kind of music, and I've never experienced anything like this. What in the world is going on? Here's a song that could have been written by an elementary school child, given the 8th notes of the scale, and said, here you go, you know, have at it. So I went home, and I started to dive deep into this mystery. And this mystery led me into wonderful paths of discovery, how music affects us, how music is, and I know that's not the topic of today, so I'll try to keep it brief, even though it's my great passion. Music affects us once again, because it conveys consciousness and it conveys inspiration. What Swami Kriyananda was able to do in this very simple song was he was able to take an inspiration and then he was able to weave around it the right melody, the right rhythm, the right chords, everything that was correct to hold this inspiration. And that's what the great composers do. They are able to take this inspiration that they have and weave around it a way to capture that. Instead of thinking, well, let's see, I'll start on a B, and then I'll have an G would be good. Well, that would sound pretty. And then a D, maybe. Oh, I haven't used an E flat in a long time. Maybe I'll use an E flat. No, that's not the way. That's the way some people compose, but that's not the way the great masters do. So when we're talking about the joy that comes through playing pieces like this, it's a tangible joy, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So getting back to the presentation here. As we improve, getting back to our little egos that are just now, and I see this in children and as well as adult students as well. It's just that thrill of doing something new, of that, wow, this is amazing. And I highly encourage for a long, fulfilled life that you do something new every chance you can to just dive in and do it. So as our ego grows, it is still healthy, and it's helping us achieve the needed confidence and a strong self-esteem. All those things are necessary. And even here, the ego is still healthy, filled with inspiration. The danger comes when we start to take all the credit for greatness. When that happens, the ego begins to harden, heralding the first stages of ego-itis. No matter how large or small the ego happens to be. This can strike at any time here. And the ego develops transient happiness that is dependent on praise and recognition. It starts fishing for compliments. How do you think I did? Did you like it? Did you like it? You know, we're all familiar with that kind of place in other people and in ourselves. And in ourselves. When you're doing something that you're not quite sure if you're the best at doing, and you're looking for confirmation from somebody else, did I do a good job? This happens to adults as well as kids, where we start, instead of just feeling the joy and letting that be your source of joy. Who cares what other people think? They're not going to tell you if you did a good job or not. You're going to feel that inside. But the ego, when it's in control, is going to be starting to look for that. And there comes a growing sense of constriction, a tightness that brings a heavier judgmental consciousness. The ego becomes defensive around insecurities. And I think we've all been there. You've been around some of the people who may have been at the stage, and it's kind of like walking on eggshells. Well, you might want to consider possibly the idea of really taking a look at what you're doing, whether, you know, trying to dance around it. Whereas with other people, you can say, well, that really didn't work. You might want to try this, of just being, and you can see it in yourself, those tiny little things that touch you off. What are your buttons that get pressed? What are those things that we don't really like being pointed out to us? And finally, the ego experiences an almost complete loss of inspiration, ushering the dark night of the performer's soul. This happened to me. We hit a seeming dead end and wonder where in the world we went wrong. If you've ever been on the internet and seen 404, you know. And if it's on your website, you start to panic a little bit. How can we fix the broken link? How can we reestablish the pathways within ourselves that can lead us back to inspiration and happiness? The solution has always been with us and will continue to be for every day of our lives. Even in these worst of situations where we're tight, where we're constricted, where we can't feel anything, that ability to connect to our source of inspiration is still there and will be every day. there is a source of inspiration or an ability to connect with it that remains deep within us all. This little light in the darkness is our ticket to expanding into our fullest potential. It can transform our consciousness, lifting us out of our self-imposed limitations and suffering. Is it easy? Yes and no. As W.H. Auden wrote, "We would rather be ruined than changed." This is the quote that I was trying to remember yesterday. "We would rather die in our dread than climb the cross of the moment and let our illusions die. We all have the capacity for greatness, but any transformation needs an act of surrender. We must actively open ourselves to our source of inspiration, whether we define it as the divine, the universe, or the highest potential we can imagine for ourselves. Once we recognize the source of inspiration that has always been with us, a whole new world of possibilities begins to open." So when we begin to draw upon our source of inspiration, the ego softens and expansive qualities begin to emerge. We start to develop a growing sense of inner peace on stage and off. Did I miss one? Probably. We are finally able to have an appreciation of the genius of others without feeling threatened. Now, pause here for a minute. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and it was a wonderful small city. I was the best cello player of my age group. It was great. It was a wonderful opportunity. I had incredible opportunities to solo with the Pittsburgh Symphony to really get a great boost of energy. Then I went to the Eastman School of Music, and I found myself surrounded by people who were just as good or better than me. And suddenly my little ego that was like, "I'm the best, I'm the best, I'm the best," was like, "I'm not the best. What do I do? How do I do this? What do I do? How do I survive? Oh my gosh, I'm feeling, well, I got an idea. Why don't I be really, really critical of others? Yeah, that's a really good idea. I'll try to find every single one of their faults. And so if I can find fault with them, then they're not perfect. That means I'm not perfect. We're on the same page. Okay, phew, that'll do it." So I spent so many years looking for the faults in others so that I can say, "Aha, they're not perfect. I'm not perfect either. We're finally on the same page. You know, I don't have to do any of this. I'm better, you're better," this kind of thing. The ego could survive on that. Then I had a period of time, I'll share this story a little bit later as well. But finally, I set it all aside. I said, "I'm going to join the Peace Corps, and I'm going to just quit everything." That day, I went into rehearsal, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, they play so beautifully. Wow, listen to that. That's incredible." I could finally appreciate the genius of others without looking for their faults. And it was the most enjoyable day that I had. We can relate even more harmoniously to the realities of others when inspiration comes through us. We're not so worried in our egos. We're not that our egos will be shaken down. And then we can suffuse colleagues, students, and the audience with the inspiration that we feel. Melinda, I'm sure, has had a great opportunity to work with conductors who are truly inspired. And I had this opportunity at my time at Eastman where Sir George Schulte, the conductor for the Chicago Symphony of many years, came and conducted us for Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And typically with conductors that you're used to, you know, they get up there, they do their work, and they have to put out a lot of energy to grab your attention. This man, however, comes on stage and he just held all of our attention, all of our energy. It wasn't, let's see, okay, he is, this is what he's done. Oh, I really should respect him. Oh, he's done this, yeah. But it was his living presence that commanded that attention. So there I was playing along, and I had the music memorized. And I was looking at him, and I was playing along, and then he's conducting, and he turns over, and he catches my eye, and I'm looking at him, and I went, "Huh?" Because the inspiration that I felt just emanating from and then connecting deeply with his eyes just took my breath away. It just left me in this transcendent state of, oh, wow. and then I better start playing again. But it was just, I didn't care in that moment. It was just the most incredible experience. And finally, our ego becomes transparent and can fully enjoy inspiration shining through without getting in its way. This is a state of flow. This is a state of peak experience where you're able to experience something greater than yourself coming through. And your symptoms of this can be a lack of wanting to breathe, even though you're doing something like or a field of energy, or a rise, or oh my gosh, what is this? I think I'll just step back and watch this unfold instead of trying to get in our way. There's a wonderful TED talk. You're already awesome. Just get out of your way. And talking about how meditation trains us to have more of these flow experiences. So this is going to be part of what we talk about today. And when inspiration works through us in musical creativity, masterpieces are born. Performances become inspired, and our consciousness becomes expansive, leading to broad experiences of fulfillment, well-being, and long-lasting joy, not limited by circumstance. Not limited by circumstance. That's the joy, that's the inspiration that we're all looking for here. And so, to show how this is possible, I've created a method called the Four Accords of the Inspired Musician. And accord means to be in agreement, unity, or harmony, and comes from the root chord, or Latin word for heart. And what is music if it doesn't have any heart? The first accord is the hush, the creating of a dynamic stillness within, so that you can open your heart to develop the musical intuition and unlock your dormant source of inspiration. Followed by the lift, catching the rising wave of inspiration and energy. And then entering the flow for consistent, inspired performance. So we're going to be talking about this and how we can use this process, not only for music, but also in our daily lives, for everything from doing the taxes to doing dishes to leading a class to working on any project that you might have. So we need to talk a little bit about resonance and attunement and sympathetic resonance. So I wrote on your sheet here, are there any sheets left? Yeah, so I can. Thank you. So let's go over our keywords for today. I found this inspiration definition online, and I just thought it was wonderful that you can find these. So inspiration being a divine influence exerted directly upon the mind or soul. So I don't want you to feel limited that inspiration comes from without. Okay, so it's divine, so I have to work with that. Versus whether the most important thing, though, is to develop your own resonance with inspiration. So a resonance, the way we're defining resonance, is a field of energy in a state of vibration. So when I, in that day, when inspiration came to me during the movie, meeting, that was a resonance to me. I could feel energy vibrating within it. And so we've all have these abilities to feel resonance. And resonance exists in many, many different fields. Bridges have to be constructed so they don't carry resonance. Because when resonance starts to happen, then have you heard of the Tacoma Bridge that collapsed? Because there was wind passing through it, and it set up a resonance, of an energetic resonance that literally shook it to a complete collapse. So when we're talking about music, this cello has a great deal of resonance. The string begins vibrating, it sends vibrations down through the bridge and then sends those vibrations into the body of the instrument. And the air resonates inside of the instrument and then can create the sound waves. So this is, if I just played the string alone, it wouldn't have any power to it. It wouldn't have any resonance to it. Now, the next here is sympathetic resonance. And sympathetic resonance is when a body or a field starts to vibrate on its own accord. I'm wondering if we could even, well, I think we'll do it with the gong, but it's thanks for bringing your viola. That's good. So, and before we do that, I think we have to define some other words first because I'm going to talk about them. Attuning is to consciously bring oneself into resonant harmony with inspiration, your source, and one another. And overtones are the naturally occurring higher range of pitches that exist within every note. We're going to start with that word here. So this is a naturally occurring phenomenon, these overtones. So we're going to talk about what overtones are. So here's my string, and I actually have a slide for this. And the first line up there is just a string vibrating back and forth. Then, if I place my finger on a node, and those little dots there, the little white parts, are called nodes. And this second one down, I'm playing exactly halfway down the string. And the top half of my string is vibrating, and the bottom half of the string is vibrating. Usually when you put your finger down, you're pressing down completely, and the only state of vibration is from your finger down to the bridge. But in this case, harmonics are produced by touching one cell of your finger to the string. So you're seeing two jump ropes, as it were. And then if I go to the third fraction, it produces a different overtone. Here's the fourth, and then the fifth, and then the sixth, the seventh, the eighth. Now you might be thinking, wow, that's a really cool cello. How does it do that? But this is naturally occurring. If you were to go out and to create a string somehow, given any, so if we could go into a forest and create, I don't know how we do it from the forest. So if we could somehow create a string out of anything, we could create this phenomenon. You would have to have enough tension for the string to, for this to work, because if it's too loose, it doesn't work. But this is naturally occurring. So do you hear, how this first harmonic, this first overtone, sounds like the same note? So this is a C, and this is the C an octave above it. It's like, wow. God really knew what he was doing when he made the harmonics. The cycles per second double. So, for instance, this is around 100 cycles per second, and this is 200. As the harmonics go up, they are doubling. This is, when you split it into thirds, that's 300. So this stuff is naturally occurring phenomenon. It's not just because of this cello. So overtones are something that we experience on many, many different levels, whether it's overtones of consciousness, overtones of color, overtones of feeling. It's not just the one thing. So you've all heard the pitch generators that perhaps you've heard in hearing tests that are just a simple tone, whereas this sound here is not just one string happening. It's all of these overtones mixed together. And I'm going to show you an experiment that I did. Oh, let me show you a few other things before I leave here. Here is another graphic example of how they work. Isn't that beautiful? So here is the full string, and then the half, and then there's the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh. And how everything comes to unity at the beginning and the end. And so I'm using this for my Attune Music Academy slide here. Okay, so that's for later. Quit here. And I'm going to take you into the recording studio for a minute. And I'm going to turn this around. Well, let's see. So here is my So here's a recording of that open string. So here is a recording of that first harmonic halfway. There's the third. Okay, you've actually already heard them. So what I'm going to do now is... Hold on. I'm going to mute all of these guys. And we're going to start at the 10th harmonic. And so you might not think, it might not sound very pretty at first, but just keep listening and bear with it. Okay, so here is the 10th harmonic. My finger's way up at the edge of the string here. And here's the 9th harmonic. It's kind of like, oh, it doesn't sound very good. It doesn't sound really in tune. And here's the 8th harmonic. It's starting to blend a little bit more. There's the 7th harmonic. The 6th. The 5th. And there's that 3rd harmonic. Now, do you notice something happening? Can you hear within this sound that lower frequency? It's not being played. This is your mind reading those overtones and creating that fundamental by itself. And so here it is finally with everything played. And even those slightly out of tune notes that we heard at the beginning all have their place within here. So every little dissonance, every little imperfection within us is part of our whole. We are not yet perfect, but yet all these things work within each other to create a beautiful, beautiful blend of our own consciousness as we come. So overtones are really important. Now, I'd like everybody to... let me turn this off for a minute. Now we come to the gong. And we're all going to stand up and gather around the gong. So, if you can just come around to the side here and get as close as you can. And we're all going to sing at the gong. If we had an acoustic piano, this would be great, but unfortunately all we have is this gong. And on the acoustic piano, if you hold down the right pedal, it's the sustain pedal, it releases all of the strings. And if you sing into it, you'll hear your voice being bounced back. It's not an echo. It's the strings picking up that sympathetic vibration and then responding in kind. Let me grab my cello real quick. Sorry. And the way this works is, this is the further magic of this. When I play this harmonic sound on a different string... So right now I'm playing on my G string, and my C string is going to say, hey, I know how to vibrate like that. I'm going to split myself in half and vibrate right here. So to create that sound, I touch it with my finger, with one cell of my finger, to create that harmonic. So the top half of the string is vibrating, the bottom half is vibrating. Where I'm touching my finger is going to stay exactly the same place. So I'm playing now on a different string completely. And you can see this lower string, this thicker string, vibrating of its own accord. This is sympathetic resonance. If you do this and sing into a piano, you'll hear your voice being sung back to you. If I play my cello into a piano, I'm going to hear the cello coming back. If you play trumpet into it, the strings will pick up the trumpet overtones and play that back. So another way this works... You can see my A and my D string vibrating here as I play this D. And those strings say, hey, I'm in that harmonic overtone series. So when you teach this to young children, It's kind of like the cello angels are helping you. So now what we're going to do is we're going to take this resonating object, and we're going to sing. We're going to sing just a loud note on this note. And we're going to sing really loud, and then we're going to stop, and we're going to try to hear if this picks up anything. Ready? Just on ah. Ah. Can we shut the door? Well, the neat thing about the gong is that there's so many different notes, and that's it's such a complex series of overtones that there's not one particular note. There was a it's more of that sound. If any of you are skilled enough to bring out one particular note of this, okay, let's try that. So we'll sing really loud. Ready? Can you switch? Because I'm wondering if it's more audible over on that side. So go ahead and change places. Oh yeah, just turn it around. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. What was that note again? La, ready, and la. Yeah, you can hear it more from the sound. Yeah, let's turn it for you guys. So you can imagine how just a piece of metal can pick up this. And the strings themselves really, really work well. Ready, and And finally for you guys. Thank you. Yeah. Ready, and Yeah. And playing the gong, I will, during our break, I'll just leave this down here so that you can experiment with the gong. It's not that you go wong like that, but you can evoke so many different overtones as you do this, just by gently tapping around the sides in the different places. And when you come down here to the bottom, there's this really cool place down there that just makes this whole thing shake. It's just really, a really fun thing to have fun with. So I'll go back and have a seat again. And if somebody can move the gong, yeah. Just over here. Be great. Okay. So I'm going to introduce the four chords to you now and allow this to be a way in which you can kind of bookmark or get into a inspired state. And we're going to start first, and they don't have to necessarily work in this order, the hush, the heart, the lift, and the flow. But I find that teaching them this way is a really good way to start with something that you can feel tangibly. So the hush is this place where you feel not a sense of dead stillness, but when you feel a sense of dynamic stillness. Dynamic stillness is when you're meditating and not just like, oh, here I am meditating again. But when you're filled with that readiness, when you're filled with that ability to feel something happening. Classical musicians are completely used to the hush because what happens, you go to a concert and you hear the symphony warming up and they're warming up and then it gets really quiet. The conductor walks on stage, yay! He takes his place. And then just before the piece, everybody's ready and it's complete silence. So we already know what that hush sounds like. We know what it feels like. It's a sense of expectation. It's a sense of readiness. It's a sense of opening yourself up to what is going to happen. So the way to develop the hush is primarily by practicing a dynamic state of stillness. Many of you who meditate do this on a daily basis, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this aspect here, but when you perform, Swami Kriyananda has always said, before a performance, meditate. That is what brings out the deeper meanings. Everything is built on silence. The musical experience is nothing if it doesn't have silence. Once again, coming to the symphony, when you walk in, you hear the orchestra warming up. The cellist might be playing the most incredible solo in the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, but you probably won't hear it because everybody else is making noise at the same time. Yet, when that solo comes during the performance, it'll move you to tears. What's the difference? It was still there when you walked in and everybody was warming up. Why now is it affecting you so deeply? It's because you can hear it. There is so much noise in our lives. So much noise. Driving here, we saw the people standing on the sides of the sidewalk, you know, holding up their signs, doing the dance, you know. We've turned human beings into advertisements. This is so, I mean, it's just so sad how we have to vie for people's attentions, because if you've ever been in New York City, I was just there in September, you walk into Times Square and it's just like, oh my gosh, Toto, I don't think I'm at the Vivekananda Village anymore, where everybody there is just shouting with their energy to be heard. That's the sense of that I tuned into, that musically you have to shout to get noticed, to get heard, you have to manipulate. Whereas I don't believe that's true. I believe we all have a place of resonance. When we hit that place of resonance, we don't have to shout. We don't have to push. Just like, here, let me show you actually. When I play my cello, if I push too hard to make a big sound, it actually backfires on me. So, let me tighten my bow. So if I try to create a really big sound just by pushing, I can get that much. Now, if I look for the resonance and I try to feel resonance within myself, you can feel a difference within you. And I can make it just as loud, if not louder, but not the... And the pushing sound that you hear. And it's amazing how much that is infused into music these days. We think louder is better versus how about just resonance is better? And so when we find this place of resonance within ourselves, we don't have to push. We don't have to shout. Of course we have to put out effort, but it's not in a forceful way. So the hush is all about creating that silence, creating that space. And on your sheet there, you'll see the little graphic. And I'm working on how to define these little propeller arms. And the way these all work is that they are fields of energy. They're overtones. I'm not sure what to call them yet. I'm thinking perhaps overtones, like blades, has too much of a cutting because they look like propeller blades, and they function as such. Once you get all of these working together, they lift your consciousness, they bring you into that place, and then they can't help but, through the principle of sympathetic vibration, affect those in the audience as well, and then they start to vibrate like that, and then this creates an even greater movement of energy, this vortex, which then lifts everybody up. And that is the beauty of live performance, is that you can experience that expansive state, that place where everybody is in a state of union together and feeling really, really good. So the hush is one of these overtones that we're going to be feeling. And so the hush is a physical feeling as well. It's when your body is free of tension. So what I'd like you to do now is tense your body, inhale, and then relax, and breathe out. We'll do that again, inhaling. This is not hush, but this is when your body feels that natural state. And great musicians know this. One of my teachers, Janusz Starker, teaches this to his students as well. And I called him on it when I started on the path, this was after I studied with him, I said, is there something that you weren't telling me? Because my yoga teacher says the same exact thing. And he says, no, I'm just, this is just what I do. But everybody knows that you just have to tense to fully release. So it's getting to that quiet place. It's getting to the quiet physical place. It's getting to that quiet mental place. And we'll be talking in a few minutes about how we can quiet our inner critics, quiet those voices in us that have many, many, many things to say about what we're doing and how we're doing it. So then we'll move into the heart. And the heart is really at the heart of everything. For music, if music doesn't have heart, then it's just sound and fury signifying nothing. Now, the beautiful thing about the cello is that it rests near my heart, and many musicians use their arms because, whether in some form or another, and what controls the arm movements but the heart chakra. That heart energy is responsible for the movement of the arms. And in music, you can't think of how a phrase ought to go. You have to feel how it should go. And the key to doing that is intuition. My teachers use the word instinct. I was accepted into a studio because I had good instincts, musical instincts. And the debate is out there whether musical instincts are born or if they can be developed. And I've seen over and over again that they can definitely be developed. I've taken students, one of my students, you know how people are starting things for the first lifetime versus other people who just pick something up as like, oh, of course, they've been doing this for lifetimes. It's just come so naturally. Versus for others, it's like, wow, I got a lot of work to do here. But people who and people who are meditate have a great advantage of doing this because they're able to tune into that heart feeling of how is this supposed to go. They're able to develop that intuition, that feeling aspect, which is not in the reasoning part of the brain. We cannot think how a phrase should go. We can't think, oh, I think I'll just slow down here and then, well, I shouldn't say that because some people try to do that. They try to think their way through a performance and it just, like, what are you doing? It just doesn't work. Whereas somebody can play a phrase 6 different ways and each of them are correct. There is no one way to play a correct phrase. There are better and more convincing ways, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. Yo-Yo Ma has produced 6 different recordings of the Bach suites. You can't say that, oh, this one's correct and that one's not correct. And if one person can do 6 different ones, everybody else has their own way of interpreting it as well. So everyone has their own channel through which inspiration comes. And it doesn't have to be through music. Inspiration is going to come to my wife through a recipe. It's going to be coming through others as architecture or another as a new way of doing something. So the inspiration that we're talking about here is not limited to music. Inspiration is going to come to us in our way of channeling, which we do best. So in talking about the heart, we need to find a way to relax the heart and allow it to open. And the best way to do that is to give it a place in which its energy can be absorbed. When I had my "what am I doing" moment in my senior year of college, I had just come from seeing my future. I had just come from playing in a smaller town orchestra, smaller city orchestra, where everybody was just cynical and miserable, and the conductor was just not very fun, and the audience was getting smaller and smaller and more elderly. It's like, what am I doing? I want to have a beneficial impact on the world. And so I went home and I was like, oh, geez, what am I doing? So I shared this with my teacher, and he said, well, David, you have to take a look at your heart and see what your heart tells you to do. And I was at that point like, oh, my heart? I'm a 20-year-old boy. What do you mean? I was literally afraid to open my heart because I didn't know what I was going to find in there. I doubted the fact, I doubted the truth that in the center of our hearts is a source of inspiration, is that we are all children of light, of children of joy, and that is our divine birthright. At the time, I was like, oh, what if I have this desire or that desire, or what if I'm really this kind of a person, and I was afraid if that was going to be that. But when we open our heart, we allow our highest potential to finally shine forth. Not the ego. The ego in the heart brings about all these different desires, but our true nature there is what we are trying to find. And so then I said, okay, I'll try. I took a look at my heart. Of course, you know, light is going to shine through. And it was just joy. And I got enough of a hit that, yes, David, hang in there. You're on the right track. That I went back to being my own self again and kept going. Now, this was at that time where I decided to join the Peace Corps. And I had that day of like, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm just going to enjoy everybody's genius. But then I thought, well, then after this day of like, yes, I'll keep going. Well, here I am. I got to find their faults again. And so it took a number of years again, in fact, before my spiritual breakdown, my performance dark night of the soul, in which I could really make that happen. So the heart is crucial, and it needs a place to rest. So many times we have so many turbulent emotions that we just hold in our hearts. And the hush, the reason why we start with a hush is we can create that beautiful, serene lake or sea that has no ripples. And we're going to let the heart be a boat that rests within and goes, just as a boat sinks into the water, our heart in the hush can allow itself to rest. Now, when we open the doors of the heart, as you can imagine, oh, I've been feeling this way for so long. Oh, yeah, just let me emote. Let me just get it all out there. And the boat will rock back and forth and the waves will. But once the heart does its thing, once the waves start to subside, then the heart can be there. And it can walk across the boat. And it doesn't really do much. Little ripples will go out. But then they'll disperse. And so the heart finally has this place of peace. It finally has this place of being at rest and open. So take a moment now to just feel within yourself that hush, that dynamic sense of stillness, like a calm lake. And then placing your heart, cradling your heart within that place, within that calm lake, and allowing any ripples to disperse. And so here we are, we're sitting on this beautiful boat on the serene lake. And now we're going to raise the sail. We're going to work with the energy of the heart. So oftentimes, the heart is the key for feeling inspiration. It can happen through the mind, but the heart is the feeling aspect that engages you to do something about it. So if you could just leave the heart energy there, it can just kind of go blah, 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 blah. And just, I'm sure you've all been in situations where feeling and emotions can only take you so far. And you can be like, okay, enough with the emotions, enough with the feeling. But yet when you uplift the feeling, and energy is movement of energy up the spine. When you catch that rising flow of energy, and that's why inspiration is such a great thing to work with, because it lifts your energy. When you feel up, when you feel happy, this is energy rising up the spine. So when you engage and catch that lift, it's like an elevator. It's allowing you to go with that flow. Sometimes you have to prime the pump. Sometimes you have to do those activities that move your energy in an upward direction. But once you can latch onto that, then you're going somewhere. And so in meditation, that's what we are trying to do. That's what we are, we're working with our subtle energies to lift it up to the spiritual eye. And when we feel that in our outward world, in our outward flows, that's what allows us to do that. So by practicing that lift, by practicing attuning yourself to that flow. So you have to be at rest. You have to have an open heart. And then you have to be willing just to commit and see where it's going to go. And we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break. And then finally, entering the flow. So you've gotten this expansive quiet, and then you open the heart, then you raise the sail, and then finally the winds of inspiration can take you and can move your boat and can allow you to enter that state of flow where time stands still and you're just enjoying the moment and you know you're doing the right thing. It's that divine confirmation that comes when you're doing the right thing. I happen to be doing the Voices of Light virtual choir every Wednesday. And what a blessing to have Jayashree in that. And it's just such a joy, because sometimes there are only 7 people on it, but yet it doesn't really matter because I know that I'm sharing what I'm supposed to be sharing. I know that I am doing the right thing. And afterwards, I can feel that blessing. Now, whether that comes from riding a mountain bike down a mountain, whether it comes from running, whether it comes from creating, whether it comes from cooking or serving in this way, that flow is a state in which you are experiencing something greater flowing through you. And it is absolutely the greatest feeling. You become a flow addict. You start having the courage to put yourself in places in which you have to feel that flow, in which you're going to be relying on that to carry you through whatever you're doing. So whether it's giving a talk and you know that you don't have the time to fully prepare, or doing a performance that you only have a limited amount of time, or doing these kind of things, to put yourself in the way of the miraculous, to put yourself in the way for inspiration to flow through you, because it's not going to happen unless it does. It's not going to get accomplished. So working with inspiration becomes this dynamic partnership where you can start channeling this at will. And whether you think of it as a demon or a genius coming out of the walls and working with you, or if you just open yourself up to that source of inspiration within you, you can enter into this dynamic relationship and then work with it in a way and form new habits. This is our experiment that we're going to be working with after the break. Can we form a habit that allows us to channel, to contact inspiration at will and bring it into every aspect of our lives? So we'll take a little, a short break here until 11:30. Feel free to play on the gong. There are, and I'll have these throughout the weekend. I brought with me CDs that we've created through the Ananda Music, and they're a fundraiser for that. So we have 4 CDs that you're welcome to look for. The Swami Memorial Concert that we had in May of last year, and then the Best of the Ananda Singers Live Performances, Best of Ananda Instrumentals, which feature Todd Billingsley, myself, Bhagavati Ramesha, Jeannie Shantz, and Mukti Dharanja. And then Secrets of Love, if you enjoy the studio recording, the live performances bring into it another beautiful dimension. And they're $10 a piece. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. evening we'll be sharing the five secrets of an inspired musician, and hoping that can be a little teaser for you to come tonight. It promises to be a beautiful concert. Todd and I will be playing. Melinda, which, yeah, okay. Next time we should play together. That would be really fun. And in fact, we're going to be playing together in March up in Grass Valley. So that's going to be really fun. The program will include pieces by Swami Kriyananda, by Johann Sebastian Bach, Gabriel Fauré. Every piece that's on there has some significant inspiration to it. So, I think it's 7:30. Excuse me. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we've given an overview now of what inspiration can do, in some ways in which we can capture that and make it our own. So let's now talk about what we can do to create those pathways, to reopen those pathways. Now, the funny thing about musicians is that the great majority of classical musicians are miserable. When here's something that they're supposed to love to do. Why do you do music? Because you love it? Do you do music because you can make a whole lot of money? Good luck. So my job, my role, you saw the Attune Music Academy, that's one of my goals, is, and you'll see some flyers over here, my goal is to offer these classes for musicians to reconnect them to that inspiration, to that first love when they picked up their instrument, and they were just so enraptured. Somewhere along the line, that got severed, and for different reasons that we actually went through in the slideshow there. So what we're going to be doing today is addressing the major places in which we are not being resonant. Now, you heard perhaps in that piece, there was one note that was kind of wiggly. And John and I spent, I'm using this cello on loan from Heaney Violins in Mountain View, which is a fabulous, Patrick's now a personal friend of mine. And his parents happen to live right next to Ananda Village up there, so it was a great way to connect through him. And he gave me a choice of 20 beautiful cellos to choose from. And they were all beautiful, and they all had their little quirks. And one of the quirks happens to be what's called a wolf tone. And in an instrument, it's a sound where it's more pronounced down here, where it kind of wiggles back and forth and it doesn't produce a pure tone. And so I have this little adjuster that I'll have to do some work with today, because it's still there. But it's like one of those little things that tells us, and don't ask me to explain what a wolf tone is and how it's there, because I have no idea. It's very sophisticated. Has to do with, I don't know. It's just one of those things that people in the shops just say it's one of those things, unless you have 3 hours to understand the physics of the physical dynamics. But for me, it's like one of those things that we just haven't gotten quite right. What are our wolf tones? What are those things in us that do not allow us to resonate with our fullest potential? So harmonics are one thing. When spirit comes along and touches it at some point and just gives us this little touches of inspiration. However, when we're feeling negative, when we're have bad self-esteem, the string sounds like this. It's dampened, it's not resonating. Or if I just dampen the whole instrument, it's not as resonant. So what are the things that are constricting us? What are the things that are not allowing us to freely vibrate? Going back to our definition of resonance, resonance is a field of energy in a state of vibration. So our job is to clear away as much of the restrictive, dampening attitudes, energies, feelings, emotions that prevent us to freely vibrate with that. If you're feeling like this, inspiration can knock on your door, but you're not going to hear it. You're not going to vibrate like that. The reason why I felt that inspiration in those moments that I have is that I was ready for it. I was open to it. I was inviting it. We have to invite inspiration in. We have to do those things that allow us to work on those levels. Is that easy? Yes and no. Going back to that Auden quote of choosing to change, we would rather suffer than change. I've seen this over and over again in cello lessons, whether it's myself or in teaching somebody. You get so frustrated sometimes when you're learning something new and you really want it to sound this way and it's just not doing, and you just keep playing and you just keep working it out, and the frustration builds and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And you try to take a deep breath and calm down. That's not working. There's something about us that must be some aspect of the ego that does not want to accept the idea that it can be better, that it can experience something better. Because it necessitates some kind of surrender, some sign of, okay, I can do it, or this can come through me. There is some aspect of wanting to stay in that place and to say, see, I told you it doesn't work. It's that part of us inside it on so many different levels, whether it's for me playing the cello or whether it's in life, whether it's working with relationships, of that glimpse that you get of like, maybe it can work. Maybe our lives do have a happy ending. Maybe everything is going to turn all right in the end. There's that wonderful quote from the wonderful Marigold Hotel. What's the title of that? Yeah. Of everything works out in the end. And how does it go? It's not the end yet. Yeah, exactly. How much we want to glom onto those self-limiting definitions, because we're comfortable in them. We are comfortable being in our state of muckiness where we're not inspired, but it's what we're used to. We don't know what being inspired feels like. It might be scary. You might be asked to take on more responsibility. Now, who here has been asked to take on more responsibility over the years? Or maybe I should say, who hasn't? Being especially a part of this path of Ananda, it doesn't get any easier. You know, you look at Jyotish and Devi, and their lives 40 years ago looked one way, but they've just taken on bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger responsibilities. The whole movie business was, and just for me, was just taking on more and more and more. I've never acted. I was asked to do that. I was asked to score the film. I've never done that before in my life. But yet, just trusting that, okay, there's got to be some divine plan, and my job is to open up to that. So those of you who have been asked to take on greater responsibility, just take some deep breaths and say, okay, inspiration, you're going to have to work with me on this one, and let's do it together. So those dampening qualities that are within us are those limiting self-definitions of, I've never done that before. I don't think I can do it. So oftentimes the people who are the most talented are the most frustrating to work with because they're not willing to put out energy. I was one of them. I was one of those students who was talented, and there were other people who weren't as naturally talented that passed me by, that were willing to put in the amount of work that I just wasn't willing to do. I was lazy. I got by academically. I got by cellistically. I was on the swim team, and my coach was just so frustrated because he could tell that I wasn't giving my all, but that was more fear-based. I had one of those coaches growing up in Bethel Park, which Shanti and I both have this connection with Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, where this coach was just, he was like, bah! And he would pound his fingers into our chest, and his way of motivation was not inspiration. Now here is an interesting thing. Motivation is one thing, and inspiration is another. They both get us to do things, but it's a completely different experience. Motivation is driven by desire, and desire is willpower plus energy to get that to happen. But inspiration implies something different, something outflowy, something that has more energy of its own that is not going to come from your own battery. So often we think, oh, I don't have the energy to do that. That'll just drain me for years. But then when you feel inspiration, they're just like, of course, yeah, we'll do it. And And when you feel, when you tap into that inspiration, it's once again that wellspring of energy that gives you the power to accomplish what you set out to do. Whereas being motivated for something can leave you exhausted afterwards when you, after you push out your own willpower without attuning yourself to that inspiration. So his way of motivating was to work with us on that basic Tomasic level of trying to say, oh yeah, well, I'll show you. That's what he expected out of us. For a light child that I was just like, oh, and I wilted in the face of that challenge. And different people have different ways of working with inspiration. And the greatest people that I've had the opportunity to work with, they take their inspiration, and they don't try to force their inspiration upon you, but they take their source and expand it out so then it can flow through you in whatever way it's going to flow. Not being defined on what they think it should do. Like, for instance, if somebody with inspiration were to say to me, well, David, I have this inspiration for you to become a graphic artist. And I, good luck. That does not lie within my talent. I am not attuned yet to that level of artistry. But they have this ability to work through us. And this is my great challenge to all of you, is to become beacons of inspiration that can light up others in whatever way they're going to shine. So I have chosen as my specific path to work with musicians and to try to bring out that inspiration. And working with a choir is one of my greatest joys, because I can see, I can hear what it can be, and then working to draw that inspiration. It's so much fun to work with people and to draw their greatest, their highest potential out of them. Being a teacher, how many of you teach? It's such a great joy to bring that, to let it shine, to bring the students out of that, no, I can't do it, into, yes, I can. And to feel that sense of accomplishment and to share. The nature of joy is to want to express itself and to want to share itself and to expand. And when you're feeling that way and expanding, and you see it expanding in others, it once again creates this vortex of energy. It creates something greater that we can all experience, and that just creates that dynamic experience. So getting back to what are the things that prevent us from flowing. And you can feel free to write some of these down. What are the constrictive attitudes or beliefs? And they'll be different for everybody. But what are the constrictive attitudes that keep you from expressing your highest potential? What are the voices in your head? We're going to get right now to those voices in your head that are there to tell you you're not good enough. Let's say you haven't prepared well enough. You don't deserve this. You aren't worthy of this. All those voices that, and I have a horrible experience. I had a horrible experience. I was fresh on the path of meditation, and I went to perform a concerto with an orchestra. And immediately upon the first note, my voices in my head turned on me. They turned on me, and they would not shut up for the entire performance. And afterwards, I was just like, I made it through, just not enjoying myself, getting in my own way, stumbling over things that I had nailed in rehearsal that weren't supposed to be an issue. And here I was doubting everything that I was going to play. People would come up to me afterwards and said, David, that was beautiful, because they could sense some underlying beauty. I don't know how, but they did. And I just couldn't take it. And so I went home and I said, okay, what is going on? And I started journaling, and I realized that the meaning of those who live by the sword die by the sword. It was my karmic retribution. I had been involved with friends who we just loved to bash other people because we wanted our egos to have some sense of worthiness. And so how do you do that? You cut off the heads of others. You say, they don't know what they're doing up there. And so predominantly, it sneaks in there. I remember exactly the person in my freshman class at Eastman where that got the disease first. And then more of us got it, and more of us got it, and more of us got it. Up till then, through high school, it's just like, yes, music is great, music is awesome, this is great. And then starts in this negativity, and then it just comes into full bloom in a lot of symphony orchestras. Now, I'm not going to say that there aren't happy, fulfilled people in there, because there are. But generally speaking, and Melinda's over here nodding her head, is that true for you, that there are a lot there? A lot of misery, yeah. And it's not only in music that you find this as well. But so there are these voices that we create in our heads. So I created these pathways of criticalness, of being very judgmental to make myself feel better. My whole self-esteem was based on how well I could do instead of who I was. It was how well I could do. So then how well I could do was only measured by how well other people could do. And so that was the motivation for wanting to bash other people. I created these voices who then turned their nasty heads at me and would not let me alone. I had to change my friends after that day. I had to walk away from conversations and seek out new company. It was life-changing. My whole social interactions changed because I wanted to stop these voices in my head. Now, do they ever go away? No, they're still in there. They still love to get in there, and they just get more subtle. They get more insidious. This is Maya. This is the sense of how we're tested on a daily basis. It gets very, very subtle. These voices that say, "Oh, you're not worthy of that. You don't deserve that." And so what are these constrictive attitudes that you have? What are these voices in your head that are the negative critics? Now, I wanted to just clarify that discrimination is absolutely necessary. I went through a phase when I was fresh on the path and having gone through this, that I was like, okay, I'm not going to be critical at all anymore. And I got taken advantage of. I learned a very, very strong lesson that somebody came in and they were they took advantage of my open-heartedness, and I ended up giving them quite a bit of money because I thought they needed it. And I was swindled, basically. And I was fooled. And basically, I needed to develop my discrimination. Discrimination is absolutely needed. When I'm practicing these days, I'm using that discrimination to say, well, that wasn't quite as good. Let's see if you can make it better. That's a little sharp. That leads a little flat. That's a little fast. That's a little slow. That didn't quite work. All those things are great. It's when we start saying, oh, man, that was horrible, when we start associating feelings to that, when we start associating self-judgment, oh, I'm no good because I couldn't play that note in tune. All these things, instead of just saying, oh, no, I didn't do that in tune. There is something about the critical nature of our humanity that likes to rip things apart, that thinks they are the critical ones, and they know what they are talking about. So how to be discriminatory without getting into the judgment? And even being critical doesn't have that negative aspect of it, because you can still be very critical. You can find all those little details that can be better, but it's when you associate a feeling, when you associate a judgment to them, when things tend to go awry. Now, critical, once again, is can go either way, but I have some friends who have prided themselves on being critical. They're not very happy. Over being critical means looking for the negative. Now, why? This is another part of why musicians aren't very happy, because they spend their 5 hours a day developing their craft looking for the negative. They're looking for those tiny aspects on which to improve. That's where their radar is. They're not looking for the joy. They're not looking for that. And that is one of the aspects that just gets so overweighted. Now, there comes a time where you have to decide where you're going to put the seesaw. If this is the fulcrum, and on this fulcrum is, do another color over here. self-acceptance of like, oh, everything's great. I don't need to aspire to anything. I don't need to change. I'm good just the way I am. And over here is the desire for improvement or the desire for change. Now, if the seesaw is tipped too far like this in the desire for improvement, we can find ourselves just being wrapped up in looking for the negative. And that is just not a very happy state to be in. You find yourself not able to feel inspiration because you've lost that ability. I was at a conference once where this gentleman cello teacher was playing, and he was not playing very well. He was having a great time doing all this stuff, but he was not playing well. And I was there thinking, oh, how dare he enjoy himself when he's not playing very well? How dare he enjoy himself? And yet here I was feeling like this, and the joke was on me. And then when the seesaw is tipped too much in this direction, I was like, oh, everything's okay. I'm just okay, just the way I am. We need this dynamic balance because that just leaves us in a place of stasis. We don't really go anywhere. So these two things are very important for us to work with on attuning ourselves to inspiration, because inspiration has the ability to take us, to give us the rough general idea, but it's not always going to give us the fine details of what we're inspired to do. For any great endeavor, a certain amount of drudgery is involved. Swami Kriyananda tells us this all the time. And he works and works and works to hold that inspiration and weave everything around it so it comes out as beautifully as it can. I'm doing a lot of writing on my blog and writing articles, and the inspiration will come, and I'll be writing, 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 and I'll go to sleep, wake up the next day, and be like, oh man, I got a lot of work to do, just as far as the wording and the flow. And I felt the feeling, that feeling that wanted to come through, but yet it is up to us to then work with those details in such a way. So we have to work with those things. And so on your paper, I'd like you to think now of what your inner critic, we're going to go on to now, to developing the ability to find the treasure within you. I have this idea that there is a motivation behind the inner critics, that their job is to keep you from a treasure that is within you. So there is a treasure deep within you that you have yet to find. There is a source of greatness within you, and your inner critics are guarding it. But if you ask the question, what are you trying to keep me from? Whenever it happens, whatever it comes, ask yourself, what are you trying to hide? What are you trying to keep from me as my birthright? And in a way, it makes sense. If that greatness were just given to us without any work on our part, it wouldn't be valued. And we'd just think, oh, I'm so great because I did this. In order to get there, in order to get to this treasure that the inner critics are guarding, you need to have the skills that inspiration can give you, that only the keys of inspiration can give you. So inspiration are the magic, those magical keys that can come in. So what are the treasures that are there? And then finally, the last thing I want to talk about before we start on our noble experiment is what, I want you to, now talking about the lift specifically, I want you to imagine your worst experience that you had of ridicule, of when you were ridiculed or when you felt really, really, really embarrassed, whether it's standing up on stage and being a complete flop, or whether people laughed at you, or whether you just didn't feel very good about something. And everybody bring that to mind. And you can feel your energy just kind of go, and you can start beating yourself up, oh, I'm not a good person. I was thinking about a conversation that I had that got me in trouble, And I found myself feeling bad about that. It was 25 years ago. I've changed a great deal. I'm hoping that that I don't have to beat myself up on anymore. Like, for instance, in music, how long should you feel bad about a missed note? How long? What is... And if it's a half note, should you feel bad for 2 hours? If it's a whole note, should you feel bad for four? You know, what's the ratio here? Versus the great masters, like I just saw Emmanuel Axe the other month up in Portland, and he was playing a Bach concerto. And he hit the last chord, and he hit an extra note in the chord. Everybody still applauded him and gave him a standing ovation at the end. Everybody did. But yet, I don't know what his mental processes were. But if somebody like that can stand up on stage and get 2,000 people to stand up and give him a standing ovation, even though he missed a chord, I would think that he wouldn't have to feel bad about that very, very long. He could say, oh well. Versus those of us. So there is a strata of greatness up there who are able to tune into inspiration, who are able to do this on a consistent basis. They're comfortable with it. They find that flow, and they just, that's where they reside. Swami Kriyananda is the same way. I've seen him do performances where he'll be halfway through a song and he'll forget his words, and he'll turn and say, well, let's do that again. And he'll enter into it again. And in the classical music world, you don't stop. If that were to happen, it would be like, oh! I mean, the whole world would be abuzz. Did you hear that the Beethoven's Ninth Symphony had to be started over? It's like, what's the big deal, everybody? I was in a, were you at the performance where, it was a Christmas one, and the keyboardist was, yes. So she was playing in a different key or something, and it was like, oh, please, let's start over. Please, can we just stop? Please. And it was just ongoing. It was just, we're performing. It's like that. And so I brought up the question, why couldn't we just stop and start over? Oh, you never do that. The audience doesn't know the difference. And I, oh, come on, people. they know the difference. But so just to show you the difference. So there are these people. There are these strata of people who naturally are at home with inspiration. They are not walled up with defensive egos. You don't have to tread lightly around them, but yet you just feel inspired in their presence. And then there are the lower strata of people who are doing it just because they love it, and they don't care. And they're just, in the violin shop, there was a flyer for the terrible chamber orchestra, the terrible adult chamber orchestra. It's for people who love to play but not practice, who love to laugh and have a good time while doing music. So it's just a great way. And so those are people down there that really have no aspirations for performing live for people. They just want to have a good time. But then in the middle is this 80% that really have these aspirations and are just so constrictive. And they see those people who make it look easy up there, and they want to make it look easy themselves, and they're caught in this turmoil, and just it's just, they're just not there. So how to work with that ability to forgive yourself and to let things go is vitally, vitally important with that inspiration. So now, getting back to the inner critic, I asked you to think of that time where you felt the most ridiculed, and your energy, and just this way. Now, we have these inner voices in our head that are even worse than can be imagined. And stage fright is all about fear, is all about, I don't know what's going to happen, what if they do this? Well, the worst things we could think of is, people will throw food at us. Well, there's no food allowed in here, so we're pretty safe. Or they could boo, and supposedly in Europe, there are times where people have been booed off stage. Or you can get the hook or things like this. But and this is the funny thing. Those inner voices, our inner critic, has no ability to harm us on a physical level. It cannot reach out and hurt us physically. And when we think of the fight or flight situation, there is nothing that can happen from our inner voices, but yet they're the most brutal. We think about, we internalize, like there are people who are scarred for life because they were laughed at in second grade when they tried to sing. And they just shut up and they never learned how to sing. They never thought they were a good singer. And that's a horrible thing to have to go through life versus just letting those things go and allowing that lift, allowing that energy to swim itself past any hurdles. I love using water because it's so fluid and it works really well for flow. And so that energy of the lift we use to get past those inner critics. And it takes a lot of courage. What I'm asking you is great. By asking you to work with inspiration, I'm asking you to be very brave, to take on things that you've never really done before, but to allow yourself the chance to feel yourself being taken past those self-limiting definitions. So those are the biggest fears that keep us back. And once we identify our constrictive attitudes, whether we place them on ourselves, on others, finding the right balance for self-acceptance and desire for improvement, because really, we have to be okay with where we are. If we're too much on that desire for improvement, I have to get better, I have to get better, we're just tight on the inside. You can't just relax. And so relaxation is a great part of that. Finding the treasures that your inner critic has and allowing yourself the courage to swim past those obstacles that our inner critic has in store for us, that try to limit us from experiencing that aspect of flow. Okay, so now what we're going to do is chant Om at the chakras. Sometimes it's not only about releasing the outer constrictions, but it's also about starting to resonate within us. So if you're familiar with the chakras, you can just think of them as energy centers in our body. We have 7 of them that we'll work with. And the first is the base of the spine. The second is a few inches above. The third is behind the navel. The fourth is your heart. The fifth is the expansion of peace in your throat. And then the sixth and the seventh that we're going to work with is the medulla oblongata, the base of the brain, and then your spiritual eye here. And these are universal. We all have them. They are naturally occurring, just like the overtones on a string. And we're going to be just chanting the syllable Om. And we're going to be awakening these vibrations. Now, sound is the most powerful force in the universe. By placing our attention here, we can use sound to awaken these energies. And we are going to be working on increasing our own resonance. And so we'll go up and down a few times. We'll start with the note G. And if you don't hear my voice, just go ahead and sing loudly. Placing your awareness at the base of the spine. Awakening that energy and drawing it up the spine to the spiritual eye. Then to the second chakra. Awakening the energy in the third chakra and drawing it up. At the heart. Throat. again to the spiritual eye. Back down to the medulla. At the throat. Finally, at the base of the spine again. Good. One more time going up. Throat. At the medulla. Spiritual eye. And now feel within yourself. Feeling the hush, giving yourself the opportunity to feel deeply, even a small drop in a calm lake sends ripples of reverberation all throughout it. And feeling the heart opening. Allowing yourself to feel on whatever level, and then take whatever you've been feeling and lift it to the spiritual eye. And now imagine yourself entering into a state of flow with any inspired idea you might have. Ask inspiration to come and fill your sail with energy, with ideas, with feeling, with presence. Thank you. So, we're going to do a little experiment now. How many singers do we have in the crowd? Okay, quite a few. We're going to use... the words to a song by Swami Kriyananda that are inspired by the life of St. Francis, but actually are possibly attributed to William the Conqueror. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this a step further. And as we sing this very simple song, and if you know it, don't know it, we'll be singing it through a couple times so you can get a feeling of how this goes. What we're going to be doing is asking, in this case, how inspiration wants to speak to us as we sing this. So we're going to start off right off the bat from the place where we just came from a very quiet, very attuned, very heart-open, and very receptive place as we sing this. So the first time through, what I'd like you to do is sing it through, and then at the end, we're going to close our eyes and feel for any energy that the song leaves you with. So we're going to enter into this flow with a state of receptivity right off the bat. Don't think about what you are expecting to get out of the song, because expectations blow the whole deal. I've had so many times where I've expected a certain piece to affect me in a certain way, and it's just, I haven't felt anything, and then I say, okay, what is this supposed to? Then it's revealed itself to me in a different way. So you can't really know for sure what it is, how inspiration is going to move through you. So it is a bit of a mystery that way. Okay, so the song goes like this. Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee, all our labors, all our joys and woes, all our pleasure, all our melody. Make us each a channel of Thy peace. When in darkness, guide us from above. Where there's sorrow, may we sow Thy joy. Where there's hatred, may we share Thy love. Close your eyes and once again feel within for any glimmer of energy, of vibration, of feeling, of consciousness. And with every inhalation, add fuel to that tiny spark. Allow it to expand with every exhalation to fill your mind, your body, your aura, your consciousness. And feel yourself resonating with that presence. And we'll sing it again through, and again, I'll ask you to feel as much as possible, especially in the breaths, how you can add energy to that spark, to that tiny flame, to allow it to kindle even more completely. So our mission here is not to feel a certain way at the end, but to allow ourselves to open to something greater than ourselves flowing through us at the end of the song. And we're not going to put any limitations on it. We're just going to see how great it can be. And for those of you who are thinking, I'm not going to feel anything, I barely felt anything that time, don't worry about it. Please just keep yourself open. We are in a feeling society, and people sometimes need a little bit of help in the feeling department, because whether we're overstimulated or we're dealing with things that have taught us it's not okay to feel, or we're dealing with medications that dampen our ability to trust our feelings, whether, and I'm not saying this group does, but so oftentimes I'll be working with people and they just don't trust their feelings because they've been taking medication for depression or other mood-altering things. And it's difficult to feel authentic about what you're feeling when you're under the influence of that. But for right now, I'd like you to just trust in the fact that you are expert feelers. We are all expert feelers. I could go on to a whole nother workshop on how we are expert at feeling. But yet we are not going to be in charge of this feeling that comes to us. We're going to let that be inspiration's job. So be receptive, be feeling. And here we go. Lord, Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee. All our labors, all our joys and woes, all our pleasure, all our melody. Make us each a channel of Thy peace. When in darkness, guide us from above. Where there's sorrow, may we sow Thy joy. Where there's hatred, once again, feel by closing your eyes and going within for any change, any glimmer, any slight vibration. And know that to be authentic. That is genuine. It's going to come to each of us in a different way. But allow yourself to feel this genuine inspiration that is yours. We each have a unique place to be in this world. And it's not through competition that we're going to get ourselves there. And it's not that through competition and fighting that we have to fight for it and get there. It's by claiming this place in the world that we have for ourselves. It's saying, this is who I am. And I was talking with Marilyn at the break about resonance and how even in speaking, resonance works. When you're shouting for attention, it's nowhere near as powerful as those three words that, is it St. John or St. Thomas, came to and said, I have seen him. Can anybody fill in those blanks for me? St. Anthony of the Desert came to the Council of Nicaea, I think it was. Something like that. It was this big debate whether Christ was human or Christ was divine. And he came and said with those four simple words, I have seen him. He didn't put up a Facebook page about it to boost his posts or things like that. He just claimed his spot there and said with power, with truth, with resonance. We're talking about a source of inspiration here, but it's really about, it's about whether you want to talk about God, whether you want to talk about truth. All of these words are interchangeable. And when we come to our place of truth, when we come to our source, where we connect with our source in this way, this is truth's way of speaking through us. This is God's way of showing us what we are meant to be doing. It gives us this genuine feeling that we are would be foolish to doubt. We'd be foolish to think, oh, I'm not worthy to feel this way. Our bodies are designed to be resonators. Our bodies are designed to pick up these subtle vibrations of energy. Our bodies are designed to be influenced positively and negatively by different states of consciousness, different states of energy. Being a musician, I've played in all kinds of places, and you can walk into a room and feel, oh, I don't know about this place. That gives me the creeps. Or walking into a place like this and feeling, yes, this is why it's such a joy to perform here. It's that the vibrations have been uplifted already, and it's just so easy. If we were to transplant this class into a deep, dark, nasty place, we would not be having the same experience. It would be altered by our surroundings. So we have been made to resonate, and our goal is to resonate with our truth, with our source of inspiration. And we each have this unique source that lies, whether it's within us or whether it's outside of us, it doesn't matter. But attuning ourselves, placing us in attunement. So I happened to mention the word attune earlier, and I just happened to skip over it. Attune, to consciously bring oneself into resonant harmony with inspiration, your source, or one another. We talk a lot about attunement on this path. If I were to play this note down here, and these two notes say, oh, I'm in tune with that. If I play this note out of tune, those notes don't resonate. Or if I detune these guys, inspiration can be there, but if we are out of tune, we're not going to feel it. So the greatest thing we can do is attune ourselves. We can put ourselves in attunement with the inspiration that we're looking for in life. And we can attune ourselves to the source of inspiration. Now, how do you do that? Do you kind of like, just kind of go... Do you do it like that? No, you go like this. it's a very subtle act of listening, of feeling for this. Now, Karen, can I borrow you for a minute? And discord happens, what I'm going to ask you to do is you're going to sing one note and you're going to hold it as purely as possible. And then I'm going to be out of tune with her and you're going to feel for the difference of that. So I'm going to start in tune with her. And you can hear how when it comes into sync with each other, it expands. So that's our next step. Thank you. So I'd like to invite those of you who would be willing to come up and sing Lord Most High from here and bless those who will be left in the audience who aren't quite ready for that, to take that leap yet. Actually, why don't you just have you stand here closer. So make like a little mirroring semicircle here. Let's just do, yeah, you can do parts of it. Oh, let me move my cello here. Sorry. Shanti, don't stand in back because nobody can see you. And those of you who are taller, go ahead and stand in the back. Okay, good. So, Lord. So what we are going to do now is we're just going to sing the song for all of you, and I want you to feel, and we're just going to sing it straight normally, just try to sing as well as you can. Lord, just all melody.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee, all our labors, all our joys and
now, the next thing I'm going to ask of this group is for everybody to listen to the person on your left, and for those of you who are on the end there, just come back and listen to the person on the right. So if I were standing here, I'd be listening to Jayashree. Karen, why don't you come stand here? So everybody just listen to the person on your left. And you're going to sing at the same time, but you're going to be aware of their energy. Make us each.
Make us each a channel of thy peace.
Good. Now listen to the people on your right.
When in darkness guide us from above.
Good. Now listen to the people on both sides.
When in sorrow may we sow thy joy.
Could you hear a difference in that? Could you sense a difference? Good. Now, I want you to feel that you are singing through the people on your left and right.
When this hatred, may we share thy love.
Good. So you're going to be listening and leading and creating together. So listening, leading, and creating together. Expanding your awareness and asking for that inspiration that you are feeling to resonate with the person next to you on either side. Lord Most High.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee.
Go ahead and stop there. Now, if we imagine each of these people up here as unique resonators, as whether they were violins, cellos, violas, in an orchestra, our energetic beings have this ability, once again, to resonate on very, very subtle levels. So what I'm going to ask you to do is now sing that, we're going to sing that phrase through, just to sing it normally again, and now that we've expanded your awareness, we're going to go into feeling that resonance, that, so if you're resonating here, that's spreading over here, and you guys are adding to that as well. So it's like all these energy sources start melding together and create a bigger unified whole through that. So let's do the just individually, just think about yourself, Lord Most High.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father.
Good. Now, start to resonate as a group. Same thing, Lord.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father.
So the question is, can you feel the difference energetically here? Can you sense that there is something different happening? And can you feel that at all? Okay, so now just think through that one verse, feeling that. And actually, let's do everybody. So just for we have a bigger circle here. So come on, stand up. And just let's go ahead and wrap around in an oval, circular.
I'll make a circle.
Kind of a circle, yeah. Okay, so feel yourself. The first step is feeling your own vibration, your own resonance. And now visualize resonance in the person to your left. And add your resonance to what's already happening. Visualize the resonance that's happening in the person to your right. And add the resonance that's happening there. And then to both together. And now see that going two people to the left, two people to the right, three to the left, three to the right. And you work your way around until you're feeling for the resonance in every person in this oblong circle. Here we go. Ready?
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee, all our labors, all our joys and woes, all our pleasures, all our melody.
And stop here and feel for that increased resonance. And I'll sing that. Sorry, I'll bring this back up again. For those of you who'd like the words, we'll sing the second verse through and place your attention and awareness on feeling this completely. Let the words go. For those of you who are singers, don't worry about the notes, don't worry about the phrasing, but your primary job right now is to resonate and to feel.
Make us each a channel of Thy peace. When in darkness, guide us from above. Where there's sorrow, may we sow Thy joy. Hatred, may we share Thy love.
And allow yourself the chance to feel bliss, to feel joy, to feel something greater than you've ever imagined. So coming back to that hush where the heart is open and just emanating and all you can enjoy is the hush, the subtlety. So as you take your seats, I'll ask you to think about one thing this week that you would like to bring inspiration to, and one thing this week that you can't imagine yourself bringing inspiration to. So that's which you would enjoy, and that's which is going to be the greatest challenge. And go ahead and take your seats again. My greatest joy has been working with this music and becoming an inspiration connoisseur. Of feeling these, and when I work with these songs, I feel vibrations in my body. The different energy centers vibrate in different ways. And if we had a whole other day, we could go through many other songs to explore this more fully. And when I stop to think about how a string works, a string vibrates because there's a bow that goes across it to make it, or it's plucked or something. So when I'm feeling these on the inside, I have to ask the question, okay, where's the bow? Who is the bow? How does this work? How am I sympathetically vibrating like that? And when you can stop and think, get into that space, and then say, from whence come these vibrations? What is producing this? Then you're getting really close to your source. You're getting really close to that causal level of inspiration, that causal level of ideas, that really, really close place. And don't be surprised if you go very, very deep. So I want you to write down on the back of your paper that which you're looking forward to doing and your plan of execution for doing it, for bringing this in. I've used the four chords as a way to talk about the process. They are interchangeable, that you don't have to work with them starting with a hush. Oftentimes in coming off of a afternoon lunchtime workshop, everybody's kind of like a little sleepy. So then you start with the lift. You start with it, getting the energy moving, and then you can work with the other aspects. So which of these four aspects will you want to lead with? What will be your plan to bring yourself closer and closer into resonance with that inspiration? You can see it on your thing, on your sheet there. So doing something. Oh, sorry, there's pencils here if anybody needs them. Anybody? I want you to set aside 5 minutes to bring yourself into a quiet place. I want to ask you to then also allow yourself to feel an open heart. Give yourself the chance to be in a place where your heart naturally feels open. Then I'll ask you to engage your energy with that lift. And when you're inspired to do something, this comes a lot easier. And then to enter into that activity with a sense of expectation and flow, where you're just immersed in the experience, and that's all that you're going to concentrate on. So doing the four steps and allowing yourself the opportunity to experiencing them completely. Now, for the activity that you're not looking forward to, whether it's filling out taxes or doing something that's just drudgery, I want you to see how much, this is your experiment, this is for you to see how much fun, maybe not fun for taxes, but how much of a flow of energy you can do. Everybody wants more energy. Everybody wants to feel that flow, and everybody wants the ability to be able to do something. However, sometimes we're faced with challenges where we have to raise our energy or to absorb new information. So for whatever this difficult activity is, I want you to approach it from a calm center. So the hush in this case is going to be getting to a calm center. The heart may not be, oh, I love to do this, but it's going to be using intuition. So getting to your calm center, allowing yourself to open the heart for intuition, which can help us in any situation that we're in. And then keeping your attitudes positive for the lift. The lift is going to be just keeping those positive attitudes. Yes, I can do this. And keep saying yes. Not saying, this is really difficult, I really don't like doing this. All those things that will bring your energy down. Keep saying yes. And then for the flow, it's just staying in, the image that just came to me is being in an overloaded canoe in a shallow stream that's not going anywhere. And taking out of the canoe all those heavy ballasts that we have surrounding this activity. And even though it's not going to be a beautifully flowing river of inspiration that we feel for this, there might be some kind of a trickle. There might be something that can get you moving and keep you going. So taking out of the canoe those heavinesses that surround it, those thoughts of this is stupid, why am I wasting my time having to do this? If I just think of all those other things that I could be doing if I didn't have to waste time in this. So thinking about how you can lighten your canoe so that you can experience some sort of flow. So this is your assignment. And I look forward to hearing back. Before we fill out our... Actually, Karen, can I have you pass some of these out? I'm going to ask if there are any questions from any part of today at all. Is to want to share itself with many. So whether you are a musician or not, as you feel this inspiration come, you'll find greater and greater joy in your ability to share it. To leave you on that note so, and invite you to come back this evening. So I wanted to say a few more things. My business coach is always telling me, David, you have to give them what they do next. What is their next step in this? So I'll be leading the Ananda Singers Retreat in June up in Laurelwood, Ananda Laurelwood, as well as offering this as a week-long program for singers and instrumentalists, the four accords of the inspired musician. It is my goal to create an orchestra, a symphony of consciousness, where we gather musicians who are able to meditate, to pray, to go into the silence before a performance, getting all on the same page, and then giving a performance. So this is the first of many. This will be the first of many workshops and retreats in which I'm reaching out to professional singers and amateurs as well. We'll have a number of people coming down from Seattle for that one as well. Some late breaking news here is that I will be going on the Holy Land pilgrimage with Daiva and Gangamata and Shivani and Arjuna, and taking the oratorio, not formally in performance, but as much as we're able to experience taking Swami's music back to its place of origin of inspiration. So it's going to be a very powerful time. So I want to say thank you so much. Yes, Ramila. We don't know. Yeah, we're not sure how we're going to squeeze in it as much as possible. But there will not be any formal performance over there, just because of the nature of the beast of that performance. But we will be singing a lot, whenever we can. Yes? Right now, it is. That's what I've got a flyer here for my four chords of the Inspired Musician. If you're interested in sharing it with anybody who you can think of, I've got it for individuals and groups, and it's this type of workshop then tailored for others. But I would be happy, of course, to tailor this type of thing, because as I'm sharing this, people are saying, yes, this is a wonderful process. You can use it for engineers, for other creative people who are looking for that sense of inspiration. I just think it happens to work so beautifully for music. But absolutely, this is my life's work from here on out, is sharing these teachings through here. So. Thank you. I shouldn't assume, should I? Yes. Yep. And I will, if you put your email on there, now is the time to scratch it off if you don't want to be on my newsletter. I send out weekly or bi-weekly newsletters of inspiration. Thank you all. This has been such an incredible 3 hours for me. A sincere joy to share all this and